Hey, what's going on? I am Ramsey Said What. This is the A-Side B-Side Podcast, the branded podcast by What's the Movement. As always, rate, subscribe, review. Thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time to press play. In this episode, episode 303, I sit down with Phyllisa Dawn Poynter. She is a new author, music journalist, nonprofit extraordinaire. I could keep going on and on about her occupations, which we actually do in this episode. But in honor of her new book, I figured it makes sense for us to play some beautiful black music from beautiful black women. So, as always, I need you to feel this.
My father died. 2017, I watched my mama lose her job. 2018 was lost, but I found my mind to go that shit so naturally. I feel like 2019 is mine. Optimistic but pessimistic at the same time. Occasionally total medical grade just to clear my mind. Stressed out, this 9 to 5. Shit, it ain't for high, but I got bills to pay, so I chase destiny from 5 to 9. They said the dream is free, but the grind is so separate. Cause anything worth having always requires effort. All these obstacles in life that I'm steady catching, I just show and prove, do what I gotta do without regretting. Cause too much talking, never been my type of hype. I'm always on full force, the kid don't play, show you right. Young old soul, and I can't even tell you what the future holds, but count on me like death and taxes, I can't never ever fold up. Amongst my peers, they call me analytical and critical, cause I think outside the box I've been conditioned to make all the moves that these motherfuckers wouldn't do, and talk about the shit these niggas scared to say they going through. Just tell me what you supposed to do when the odds stacked against you and they expect you to lose.
What you gonna do?
Just tell me what you supposed to do when the odds stacked against you and they expect you to lose.
Is you gonna win?
Is you gonna just refuse to lose or succumb to the pressure and do what they expect you to? Is you gonna win or you gonna lose or succumb to the pressure and do what they expect you to?
What you gonna do?
Found someone in my corner that loves me a lot and sees around me and not just a star. Girl, let's make it known. I'll give you my name and everything that comes with it. Yeah. I know you're like a diamond ring, you're just so flawless. Handle you with caution. No other options, yeah. Didn't give up
A very special guest. This is like a makeup interview. So I still actually have our first interview on a hard drive that I need to take to Geek Squad.
Lord.
But I always like to let my guests introduce themselves. So take it away.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always good for a redo, and this time is for a different reason. So hello, everyone. My name is Felicidon Poynter. I can officially update my title. So I am a entertainment journalist and author.
Yeah, that's amazing. How's that feel? You're the second author I've had on this season.
It hasn't hit me yet. Just because I feel like I'm growing into the journalist title. I've kind of like started to switch over from calling myself a blogger, which is odd for someone who actually graduated with a degree in journalism.
Yeah.
So I'm transitioning into formally calling myself a journalist and now attaching the title author. It just seems so surreal because it's happening so quickly. Mm-hmm. I'm sure like I'll grow into my shoes, as they say, eventually.
Yeah. And a publisher.
True. Very true. It's so odd. Like sometimes things just, I guess like divine timing, some things just make sense and opportunities kind of just fall into your lap, if you will. Well, that's been like the recurring theme in my life.
Yeah. And nonprofit executive director.
I mean, don't fluff me up. I mean, like,
hey, you do it.
I mean, it's hard for me to accept everything that I do, but I think the way I kind of position it is I'm just passionate about storytelling and telling those stories about Black art. So yeah, the way I kind of like divvy up the way I tell my stories takes different mediums. Sometimes it's writing a book about it to educate younger people. Sometimes it's actually getting new musicians' music out there by way of the stories I tell as a music journalist. And sometimes it's through helping others tell stories about other great musicians. And that's where like my nonprofit work comes into play.
Word. That's actually how we met. You you covered my interview of this here podcast with Khalil.
Khalil Gibran.
Yeah, shout out to him, man. He has a crazy album on the way that I've gotten to listen to.
I'm jealous because he hasn't sent me anything and I'm starting to take it personal. So if he hears this, I hope he knows that I'm taking it very personal.
I'm sure he will. Well, you know what it is? I had to go see him to hear it. So he didn't send it to me.
Okay. you saved him.
Yeah. So you have a new book out. Let's talk about it. So it's a children's book. Where's it available? I know I can go to your site and buy it, but everywhere else?
So it is available in the form of a hardcover book at all distributors. So like your Barnes & Noble, your Amazon, things like that. It's also available in ebook format, whether like you're a Kindle or a Nook or whatever your preferred device is. So you can purchase it that way, or if you wanted to purchase it with me, you can purchase it on our website.
Nice. So it's called Sweet Sounds. It is the ABCs of Black women in music. I said that correctly, right?
Yes. So okay. Sweet Sounds is a shortened title. And I mean, like, what is it that you want to know about it? There's so many ways we can take this.
You talk in our conversations, you talk about your goddaughter often. So is any inspiration there?
My goober is, so I have four godchildren and I call them all my munchkins. I'm going to switch it to minions because they're getting older now. They're like almost at the preteen stage. I know. I want them to be babies forever. But Sweet Sounds was actually birthed through a kind of interaction with me and my oldest goddaughter, who I talk to about with you often. So hi, Ciamara. I'm sure she's going to listen to this and she's going to take it very personal if I don't say her name. So she was over my house visiting, spending time as we typically do. And I happened to kind of like be brushing up on my vinyl collection, like alphabetizing everything, digitizing everything, like getting everything lined up. And I was like, okay, well, you know what? While I'm doing that, I'm going to play some CDs, right? CDs. Who has CDs?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I was playing a CD on my sound system and it happened to be The Very Best of Anita Baker, right? So her top classic hits. And as the songs were kind of looping, to me, it's just like, I know this music front, back, sideways, up and down, diagonal, right? Mm-hmm. So with her, when I was playing it for her, I never realized that I had never stopped to have a conversation with her about the artist that we listen to when she's over here. Yeah. So she stopped me and she was just like, who is this? And I was just like record scratch. And I was just like, excuse me? And she's like, who is this playing right now? And I was just like, wait a minute. You mean to tell me in all your years of breathing, I've never once said this woman's name around you? And she's just like, I don't know who this is. And I kind of like was disgusted with myself. Like, how do we let it get to this point where the children cannot identify Anita Baker? Like, are we not cleaning up enough on Sundays? Are we not playing this enough in the iPads and around the house? Like, what are we not doing? So I started to ask her more questions, like, do you know who Aretha Franklin is? And do you know who Billie Holiday is? And do you know who Chaka Khan is? Do you know who Whitney Houston is? I started to ask her names about these really prominent women in music that also happens to be a part of my vinyl collection. So as I'm like shifting through the vinyls,
I'm like, do you know who this is? I got a needle on the wall right now. So
yeah, right. So I'm like, do you know who this is? And she's like, no. And I'm like, do you know who this is? And she's like, no. So as I'm playing the music, she's like, okay, the music sounds familiar. I've heard the music, but I just can't put a name to the artist. So as I started to think about it, I was just like, we're really failing this generation behind us. As Twitter would say, like, we're losing recipes, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I want to create a way that I can pass on this rich legacy of Black music, more specifically through the scope of a woman, to my godbabies in a way that they are interested, intrigued, and can continuously go back to it and educate themselves. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do a book. And the educator in me, I was like, I'm just going to do an encyclopedia. I'm going to do a big brown book of all of the Black women in music. And it's going to be boom, I'm just going to hand it to her. But then I started thinking about like, how hard is it for me to even get her to open a dictionary? So I was like, if I give her an encyclopedia, she's never going to flip through this.
Yeah.
So I had to like sit with the idea for months and months and months, and it kept racking my brain. And I was like, okay, if I combine history, music education, women's history, and retainable educational kind of background all into one ball, I was like, why not an ABC book? It can be bite-sized pieces of information. And that's how Sweet Sounds was born. So it was born out of me trying to educate my goddaughter about Anita Baker. And it kind of blossomed into this really big overarching educational piece for children across ages.
Yeah. So I have been blessed to get the advanced copy. So it's funny you said Anita Baker, but Aretha was the one that got the A. So how many other, like, I know, like, throughout all the letters, you were probably like, oh, should I do this one and not this one? How many, like, how do you feel about, like, the people you left off and how difficult of a process was that?
I know that people are going to be up in arms. Now, if you know me, you know that I have what I call the five honorary aunties. And these are five women sonically that have shaped and molded me as a woman, but most importantly, as a music lover. And of the five women, they are Anita Baker, Chaka Khan, Diana Ross, Whitney Houston, and Patti LaBelle, right? Those are my five, my starting roster, right? And immediately when I thought about it, writing the ABCs, I was like, wow, that limits my scope. So I initially, like, all of the ideas started pouring out of me. I was like, Anita has to be in there, and this person has to be in there, and this person has to be in there. And there were going to be multiple pages. Like, there were going to be like four pages for A and four pages for B. But then when I started to dissect it and kind of like do troubleshoots with my godchildren, they were like, oh, it's too many pages. Oh, it's too much information. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, I have to simplify it to one person per letter. This helps with retention, but it also allows me to double back and teach them about other people that are not here. Mm-hmm. So that conversation starts, like you said, like, oh, Anita Baker's not in here. So then we automatically have the conversation going like, oh, also what starts with A is Anita Baker. I wanted it to be a mix up. I wanted it to be women in the book that were prominently known, but also have historical context. So some women, for example, in the book for like Kim Weston is for K. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kim Weston, a lot of people may hear the name and may not know who she is. Kim Weston was a really prominent Motown singer back in the 60s. She did a collaboration with Marvin Gaye that kind of like is what launched her career. It Takes Two. A lot of people know the song, mm-hmm. but they don't know the name. So one prominent thing about Kim Weston is she was one of the first, not the first, but one of the first Black women to record Lift Every Voice, the Negro National Anthem. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to have women in the book that not only were either forgotten about, but also had major roles in the way we look at music now. So I wanted Anita, I fought for Anita. Like, yeah. I fought for Anita to be A. But I think that when you're doing an educational piece, you have to be very mindful of how you're tying the educational components yeah. in it. So we went with Aretha, which is not a bad pick by
any means. No, yeah.
But there is definitely going to be a spillage of different editions and ways we can add on to it. But I thought it was a great way to start by kind of like focusing on women that are both known and lesser known, but also women that historically have made a significant impact in music.
Yeah. And also funny, you said Diana Ross, but you picked Dionne Warwick. So if you guys couldn't tell already, Philosodom is also an educator. So another title over. I feel like we're going to be doing that throughout this whole interview.
Oh, gosh.
I still have a few more that I haven't touched. But yeah, this book is awesome. Like, I learned a little bit in this, and I like to think I know everything going on, and I do not. So
I'm glad. I love to hear that. And I think that, again, goes back to editing, like mm-hmm. going through the process. This book has been a labor of love for over a year, and I've quietly worked on it, and I haven't told anyone. And me and you work really closely together.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wanted to wait until like the very end, until like I was like really sure. Mm-hmm. And looking at the book, I didn't want it to be women that everyone knows, that everyone can think of. Like, immediately when I think of D, there are two people that pop into my mind. Diana Ross, my honorary auntie, mm-hmm. and then Donna Summer. Those are the two yeah. women. I was like, everybody is going to know them. Why not swap out people that also have significant impact, like you said, with Dionne Warwick? A lot of people don't realize that Dionne Warwick was one of the first African-American pop stars. One yeah. of the first to travel internationally in pop music. And she also has a doctorate in music. So a lot of people don't realize a lot of Dionne Warwick's songs, I got to call Diane, she would have been so mad. Dionne Warwick's songs have been sampled and covered by other artists that have kind of like taken it and gone along with it the same way that Whitney Houston did a cover of Dolly Parton's song, I Will Always Love You, mm-hmm. and everyone accredits to Whitney Houston. But Dionne Warwick, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of her major hits were covered by other artists. Like Say a Little Prayer for You, that was mm-hmm. covered by Aretha Franklin.
That I didn't
think
know.
Think about A House Is Not a Home, that was covered or sampled by Luther Vandross. Mm-hmm. We think about, I can't remember right now, but there is a Anita Baker song that came out that was a cover of Dionne Warwick.
Wow.
So there are a lot of songs that have been re-recorded in Dionne's history that people don't accredit to her.
Yeah.
Because the second version kind of rose to prominence.
Yeah, that's kind of like how I feel about this woman's work by Maxwell. Like, that's a cover, which is bonkers to me. But I didn't know that Dionne Warwick was from Jersey. That was another thing that I did not know.
Really?
I had no idea.
Dionne Warwick is probably one of the most Jerseyest people that I've ever had a chance to meet. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that are in the younger generation, even our generation, have come to know Miss Warwick via Twitter. And her,
she's hilarious on Twitter.
Yeah, like her brazen personality on Twitter. But even back to the first time I've ever met her, I knew off the bat that this Twitter persona that people are calling it, this is actually who she is. Like, she's always been this way offline. And I had the fortune of meeting her prior several times and in different passings. But also, Dionne Warwick comes from a very prominent New Jersey musical family. If you're not really familiar with the gospel music scene here in New Jersey, which is where the Gospel Music Month for the month of June was founded in the state of New Jersey. Dionne Warwick was a part, her sisters were a part of a group. Her mom was a very prominent gospel singer. Dionne Warwick sung gospel music. Mm-hmm. She's also the cousin of Dr. Sissy Houston, who is Whitney Houston's mother. So yeah, so the Warwick family is very prominent here in New Jersey as far as music is concerned.
Gospel is this is a gospel state. Like, outside of like the Bible Belt, this is a crazy place where, you know, do you feel like the R&B girls still come from gospel like they used to?
No.
Okay.
No, it's like, I don't even have to debate it. I think that, but that goes back to the way in which society as a whole views religion versus spirituality. Like, there's always that debate of whether or not you could be religious or you're spiritual, and kind of like the war between the two. I think that there are still women vocalists here in New Jersey that I know personally that sing in the church and that have started in the church. But also, even if they're not active members in their choir or chorus at church, a lot of the Black songs that we learn, like some of the first songs we learn, are typically like Negro spirituals, or they're gospel songs that have been kind of like dressed up. Like, think about songs like Amazing Grace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like His Eye Is on the Sparrow. Like, a lot of these songs that people know, they don't associate that necessarily with religion, right? But it's a gospel song at its core.
That's a fact.
So, I mean, like, the girls are not going to church anymore, which is up for them to choose whether or not they want to go to church. Mm. But I think that prior, and I learned this during my research, a lot of the reason why vocalists came from the church background, it didn't have a lot to do with spiritual ties, right? It had to do with the access to music training and music education courses. And a lot of churches have music ministries. And as part of the music ministries, you actually have trained pianists and organists, and you do have actual composers that can read and write music. So a lot of Black singers growing up, male and female, started in the church because the church was a free way to get that experience if you did not have those kind of like systems, music education systems within the school, where like someone like a Phyllis Hyman, who came from like public chorals and public choruses. Most other people started at church for those reasons.
Yeah. Shoot, myself, like, my first music encounters are at church, like playing the drum. I'm an old church drummer.
You know what they say about church drummers.
Yeah, like, I don't want to get into it. But yeah, and you know, and sang in the choir, sang my solos, you know. But
I mean, I got my start in music in the school choir, and I'm not Christian. I'm Muslim, and in the Muslim Islamic religion, we don't typically sing because that's not seen as a way to praise God. So we don't have like a chorus or a choir. So for me, I did the exact opposite. Like, I have friends and family. One of my sides of my family is Christian, Baptist in particular. So I learned the church songs, and I learned like the Christmas songs. And then when I got to school, public school, fortunately for me, at the time growing up, they did have a chorus, and they had a choir at school. So I got to learn music there. So learning how like the tenors and the sopranos and all, like, how that sounds together, and how to, I don't know if they even do this anymore at schools, but they give you, like, you could pick an instrument and you take the instrument home and you learn the instrument at school and you practice at home. It drove my father crazy. And as much as I wanted a drum set, he was not with it. And I had to play for the flute. So.
Oh, you play flute too?
Yeah.
I was in orchestra. I'm still kind of nice, believe it or not.
I'm rusty, dusty, crusty to the side. Right? So, but learning how to sing and how to use the voice as an instrument, and then being ushered into instruments, actual carved instruments and mm-hmm. manufactured instruments, it helped me shape my love for music. Like, I had such a greater appreciation for it when I would hear vocalists sing, because I knew exactly how hard it was to get those notes. And I knew exactly how much training it took to be able to do a run or a riff or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. All the chromatic scales that Jasmine Sullivan can think up, and I can't make it make sense in my brain.
It don't make sense, and it's not supposed to make sense. The girls that know, the girls who don't.
Let's actually talk about kind of pivot back to the book. So the illustrations done by Amir Singh, how did that collaboration come about?
So Amir was a godsend, truly, honestly and truly. I know that there are plenty of creatives that are probably listening to this right now. Sometimes you have an idea in your brain and you see it, but you cannot execute. I am not an illustrator by any means. I can do graphic design work. I can do video editing, audio editing, but mm-hmm. my ministry has never been coloring. It's never been illustration. That's never been my work.
You live on Canva like me, right?
Listen, first of all, if you want me to draw something by hand, I always draw a stick person with no facial features, and I use a color to express emotions. So that's like the bare minimum of like what I can do. Like Canva, I could freak a Canva design. I cannot hand draw anything. So for this project, a big part of this not only was the history and the actual words that I was writing, but the images. I wanted images to actually capture the humanness of these people. I wanted children, once they open the book, to be able to say like, oh, I saw this person, or to be able to identify different characteristics of the Black face, to be like, oh, this person looks like me, or they look like auntie, or they look like Nana, or they look like cousin such and such. I wanted the illustrations to be warm and inviting to children. So when I was looking for someone to do with the illustrations, I wanted to pick a Black woman, number one. Mm-hmm. So, and kind of filtering through all of the amazing Black women I came across, there was an amazing illustrators group called Black Women and Black Women Illustrators, which was a hashtag, and they had a group on Instagram or a page on Instagram. And I kind of like went through their portfolio. I got in contact with the page owner, and I was like, hey, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I'm trying to do. I just need someone to execute it. So I kind of filtered through like 30 names of people. I looked at their portfolio, and the problem that I came across, was a lot of illustrators, when you tell them that you're looking for something for children, they skew towards the Disney Pixar side. And a lot of illustrators that do human illustrations, they go so detailed that it looks like a portrait. Like, it looks too realistic.
Yeah.
So I wanted to leave some room for fantasy, and I wanted it to be in the middle. And when I came across Amira's stuff, Amira's mission overall is to identify and express feminism and women advocacy across all of her work. And looking at how she loves pop culture same way as I do, she would do like fan art of different like recording artists. Some of her bigger pieces was like Cardi B illustrations and things like that. Mm-hmm. So when I came across it, I was like, this is my person. This is who I need to be working with. So if anyone is out there looking to kind of find illustrators or find creatives, the first place I started was hashtags. Like, there are so many different hashtags you can find and follow on different social media platforms, but there's also other gig worker sites like Fiverr, which is another good mm-hmm. place that I go. But I definitely found Amira, like, she was like a diamond in the rough. Like, I was digging and digging and digging to find someone who matched not only my vision for the book, but had the same passion as me. And I was like, God bless me with her.
Yeah. Like, this, the aesthetic on this is like crazy. I love this artwork. Like, this is the kind of artwork like that I feel like my mother would buy and put in their house type of stuff, you know?
That that was like when I saw it, so we were going back and forth in the creative process, and you've worked with illustrators in the past, you work with mm-hmm. creative people. So most times when you have two creative people in a group, you butt heads because mm-hmm. everyone wants to be like, oh, I know what I'm doing, I'm the best at this. With me and Amira, it was so collaborative, it was so easy. Like I would tell her, like, hey, this is the person that, this is the page we're working on, this is the figure, I'll pull reference images. And then she'll be like, all right, how you feeling? Like, I was like, I want it to be soft. And she knew exactly what I meant by that. Mm-hmm. Or I want sharpness, or I want like a gleam in their eyes, or I want them to be like softly positioned. And like, she understood everything I was saying. And then when it came to colorizing these images and like adding the different like texturisms of black yeah. hair, and like,
yeah, I was gonna black say that
facial like, features, she like understood it. Like she got it. And I think yeah. that being a black woman and working in pop culture around black entertainment, it wasn't difficult expressing any of this to her. She was a part of the culture. She understood it. She lived it. She breathed it. So when I was passing off ideas on her, she would sketch something and she was like this. And I was just like, are you in my brain? Like, do you yeah. see like what's in my head? It was so seamless.
Yeah, like I'm looking at this one Azenia Franca, like I couldn't like imagine trying to draw her hair texture, and then like a Billie Holiday, then like a Gladys Knight, like they all look so spot on. They look like they're based off of like photographs, and they're probably not.
But the thing is, they're half and half. So what I would do is I wanted. Because a lot of the, if you look throughout the book, and I'm sure you have, a lot of the figures, I wanted them to be captured at certain age points. Mm. So when you look at the figures, like an Aretha Franklin, who's had a rich, rich, long career, illustrious career, mm-hmm. there are so many iconic photos out there of her, right? You had the initial phase where she wore high updos, like the 50s and 60s, which is what I wanted to capture. And then you have her Black Power movement when she wore her hair in an afro. Yeah. Like there's so many different variations. Then she had the pixie cut for a long time. Mm-hmm. And people like a Gladys Knight, like you said, Gladys Knight has such very specific, beautiful facial features, like her lips, the way her lips indent, mm-hmm. and like the structure of her nose. And I think that with Amira, even though I give her reference images, I would reference particular facial expressions. Like, hey, I want her to look this, I want this reference image as far as like body, like composition, but I want her face to be younger. Or yeah. I want you to like reimagine this pose, like merging two images together. So she like really kind of took the creative liberty. I gave her a reference point somewhere to start, but she kind of just like hit it out of the park.
Yeah, like this Queen Latifah, this is like living single Queen Latifah right here. Like, so like, let you know, it's crazy. Like all of these artists that you've put in this book, it's like they all have had like different eras within their own careers, and you like picked one to highlight. That's really dope.
I'm glad you caught that. Like it's so hard, especially like thinking about Queen Latifah, like you just said. Queen Latifah has had amazing runs in so mm-hmm. many different elements of entertainment, whether she was producing on albums, whether she was rapping on albums, being yeah. a label owner, to being a jazz singer, to them being an actress. There are so many different facets of a lot of these women in this book. And it was so hard to pinpoint exactly what part of their career I wanted to focus on. But that's where it kind of like discernment comes into play. And I was just like, all right, this is where we're going to roll with. And mm-hmm. I wanted it to be fun enough for the children to be able to look at it visually, but then kind of like nostalgic enough for the parents or the guardians that are going to be reading it to them to easily be able to look at it and be like, oh, I know where this era mm-hmm. is from. So it's kind of like balancing of the two.
Yeah. Queen Latifah is close to an EGOT, right? Like I know she has an Oscar and a Grammy probably.
I believe she is. I believe she doesn't have an Emmy. I believe she was nominated for her talk show. If I'm not correct, someone correct me. And I know that she doesn't have a Tony. She's done Broadway and she's done off-Broadway, but yeah. I know she doesn't have a Tony. I know that she has is it a Grammy? I'm not sure.
I know think she got her Oscar from, and ironically enough, it was Chicago. but on the film version of
it. Yeah, I'm gonna say yes because she did it on Broadway too, but I know the Oscar is from Chicago, and I think that the Grammy, if I'm not mistaken, is probably one of the jazz albums. I don't think it was a hip hop album. I could be wrong. Someone correct me.
I think you're spot on. So Fili, you also own and run Invert Entertainment, which we talked about in the Lost interview. So
I feel like I'm the Tupac tapes. Like
that interview is that's detox pretty much.
Never gonna drop. Like.
But so independent indie music music publication. So what all right, so this is the question I always ask myself when I'm reviewing people's albums. Who gave me the audacity to do this and to talk about other people's art in this way or to be critical? Like, how do you feel about covering, especially independent artists that are just bubbling?
It's so hard. Like, it's walking a fine line. Mm-hmm. I think for artists that are signed to major record labels that have an established career, like, think about, like, a Kehlani. Kehlani has released she's released at least at this point 4 albums and then several mixtapes. So she's used to having her work picked apart by critics. An artist that is, think about like a Khalil Gibran, who may not be known to the masses. And if I was to do a review, this would be a lot of people's first time seeing his name pop up in a long format review. Mm-hmm. So for me, I kind of have like a rule of thumb now. Before, when I first started Invert, I was going to review anything and everything that came across my desk. And as you know, managing What's the Movement, you get a lot of submissions and not all of them are your favorite. And a lot of artists deserve the grace, especially independent artists, when they're just starting because they're getting their footing sonically. Yeah. So for me, what I would do is when I have either a PR person or a management company or the artists themselves or the label reaching out to me to say, hey, can you do a review on this? Or we would love to hear your thoughts on this. I typically, first thing I say when I listen to the project is it good?
Yeah.
Like, sonically, is it good? Is it well mixed? Is it mastered properly? Is everything produced well? Is the vocal cadence there? Like, I'm sure you've heard like people that record it on their phone and throw it onto an instrumental, mm-hmm. right? The bar is it good? Like, when I hear this, does it sound well produced and well cared for? It? Mm-hmm. Then the second part is like, okay, do I personally think it's good, right? Is there anything positive I can say about this project? And I compare that to the criticisms that I have. So if I look at the chart to say, okay, I have way more criticisms than I do of positive words of affirmation or like positive notes to give or like praise mm-hmm. or like any type of accolade that I could provide, then if the negative is outweighing the positive, then I won't write the review. So I try to find balance that way. So that way we're not constantly putting out negative thoughts on different things or scrutinizing them too heavily. So by the time they get to the point where they actually have a fully realized project, then it's like, okay, now I understand their growth as an artist. They understand themselves a lot more. So I can fairly critique. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like how I have my rule of thumb on reviewing. I don't like to review albums, to be honest. I had a really bad run-in with an artist in the past, several artists in the past. And even recently, I've had a bad run-in with an artist when I've given an album review. Because artists are sensitive about their stuff. Shout out to Erykah mm-hmm. Badu, right?
Yeah.
But as a journalist, I can't fluff everything for you. That's what a publisher is for, not a journalist. Yeah. So it's like, if you're looking for someone to write a glowing review, there are plenty of platforms unethically that allow you to pay to post. So you can do that. Yeah. Or you can have your reviews and press release and all stuff written out by a PR person and put up on PR Newswire. Yeah. That's not what we do at Invert. We try to give our honest, critical, yet insightful review for different projects that we like. So a lot of albums that come across our desk, we won't even write about.
Yeah, I have a similar process. Like, it's like, well, so on What's the Movement, we do not write bad reviews. So if I can't find anything good to say about you, I'm not going to say anything. And I want people to kind of take that as a challenge versus like being angry. I want like if and I also understand that music is subjective. So like if I don't like it, I'll pass it to somebody on the staff. And if nobody likes it, all right, like probably not good. So also like just come harder. That's all.
True. I mean, and the thing is, sometimes you have to be mindful of who's writing the review. I think that in the past, I've tried to do reviews, especially when I was just starting out, on everything. Like sonically, I was all over the place. Like, and I feel like I wasn't doing justice to some of the artists because they were in genres that I didn't have a lot of background references for. So I couldn't understand where they were going for, what they were going for, where they were pulling from, what their inspiration was, things that sounded similar, things along that nature, to add like a fully realized textured review. Yeah. And I think for moving forward, what I did was, if there's a genre that I just don't have a lot of experience in, that I just don't have the knowledge of, then I won't write the review. I'll pass it off to someone else, like you said. So like, there's some genres that I just don't like. I'll be honest. I say this to my writers that come in all the time. I don't like death metal. You're never going to see me write about death metal. Yeah. Never. Not ever. Not now, not ever. Like, quote me on this. Like, I don't like it. There's nothing positive I can find about it. So there's never going to be me writing a review for death metal because I don't like the genre. Yeah. There are other genres that I'm just not particularly like my cup of tea. Like aesthetically, like country, like I listen to country music, but when a newer artist comes out, they don't modernize country in a way that I would need it to be modernized for me to write a review. Yeah. And the honky tonky traditional like country or even like bluegrass, I just cannot get with it. Now, there are a bunch of people that have country albums that I've written reviews about because I love the album. But then that goes back to like the screener questions, right? Is it good? And do I have anything good to say about it? Like,
That's a genre I've never touched as a writer, country. I've written a metal review, also not my cup of tea, and I've only written one. So I was just curious, you know. I've had nothing but journalists on this show quite recently, so I've been asking a lot of the questions I ask myself. So I appreciate the input.
No problem.
Last thing I want to talk about before we get up out of here. We have to talk about the IEMC, so it only makes sense. So I answered a Fila
about this. Lord, don't do that.
Man, you the boss. You know, that's how that goes.
It's a partnership. I like to
say that. Yes. And shout out to Kira and Deja.
Yeah, right. So for those who follow me on social media and follow Ramsey on social media, you've seen either in the past or even in our bios, we have an organization listed as IEM Coalition. Now, the IEM Coalition is the Independent Entertainment Media Coalition, shortened to the IEMC, which is a nonprofit organization I founded and have some amazing people on my board. Ramsey is one of them. And the mission of the nonprofit is to help freelance media folk, right? So whether you're a blogger, vlogger, writer, podcaster, editor, whatever it is, whatever your medium is, your preferred platform, we want to help you in several different ways. So we do that by programming events that we have, and we have a bunch of events that we're going to be announcing soon, and partnerships where we partner with other likewise nonprofit organizations. One of our notable partners is Equal Space, which is a co-working space, the only Black and queer owned co-working space in New Jersey, especially in this area. It's hard to find them. That's affordable. And we also do financial giveaways with any high school student that's looking to enter the field of media. So we have the Budding Blogger Scholarship that we give away every year. And then we have other initiatives that we donate to throughout the year. For example, there is a newsletter that goes out with opportunities of the week. Maybe if you're a journalist or freelancer, you've heard of this or you've seen this online. We periodically partner with them to sponsor and cover freelancers that were either laid off or lost a gig. So we cover their subscription for the year. Or we donate one to give it away to someone who's looking to enter the field that lost a full-time staff position so that they can find their financial footing by way of opportunities via the newsletter. So there's a lot of stuff that we do at the IEMC.
How do you think we've done since 2020, since the pandemic? How do you think we've done pivoting?
I think the pandemic was a great adjustment. Ironically, we would have been celebrating our four-year anniversary, but with 2018, we didn't do anything. We didn't really do anything. I kind of just had the namesake going.
Yeah.
2019, we kind of thought about all the stuff that we wanted to do, and 2020 just kind of like paused us. We were like, all right, adjust.
When was state of New Jersey? That was 19.
State of the culture. What was it with the state of New Jersey? I can't even remember at this point. I think it was 2020. Was it not 2020?
I think it was 2019. Right before.
What was it, 2019 or 2020? Because 2019 we were shut down in March.
Yeah.
And I think it was 2019. Because
it was in February. We did it. It was 2 days after Feels Like R&B, I think, or maybe the day after or something like that.
Was it 2020? I think it was 2019. I could be wrong, you guys. My memory is trash. we started, I think over time, what's been the most important for me, we've had changes to the team. We've had changes in positions. We have changes in mission. I think now we truly understand what our purpose is and how each person's strength plays into their role. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of times we want to do good, people that want to start nonprofits, but we kind of don't know where to start. And we think that we have these really ambitious goals about like what we're going to do and how much money we're going to raise and all this stuff. And I think that at our core, the best thing that we've done in these past 2 years is align ourselves with organizations that matter to the people that we're servicing. The other thing is to create relationships and networking opportunities across journalists that are prominent, right?
Yeah.
So we have really prominent journalists that'll reach out to us to say, hey, we want to partner with you, or we support what you're doing, or is there a way that I can forward something that you're doing to someone else? And I think that we have a solid foundation. Before, I think our positioning was, okay, we're going to get out there. We're going to make as much noise as possible.
Yeah.
But I think with the pandemic, it forced us to sit down and be intentional.
Yeah.
And I think that is what we've been doing so far. Like being very intentional about where our money, when we invest in other people, where is it going? The type of events that we're having, what's the goal of it? Are we just networking just to be networking? Or is it some greater cause? And any partnership that we're doing, how is it a benefit to not only us, but to them? Like, what are we adding to them? And I think that the first thing that I think about recently is our spotlight in NJ Tech Weekly, when they asked us like, okay, as a nonprofit, you're on the board with a bunch of techies. Like, how do you fit in here? And I was like, well, as the IEMC, we're always keeping our eyes out on what technology is going to be existing to help the freelance community. So although we don't come in the shape of like a tech company, we are making sure that we have our ears to the ground to see, okay, oh, Patreon is popping right now. We need to make sure that we are going to be preparing information about how to create your Patreon and how to create different groups. Oh, people are doing text communities now. How do we do that? Oh, people are trying to do newsletters, Substacks, and different things like that. How do we do that?
Yep.
So in our next wave, and we're in February now, so we're going to be starting really soon, probably in quarter two, starting March, April, where we're going to be rolling out educational videos and masterclasses. Like, okay, this is what you want to learn. This is how you get there. Another thing that I found is that we have a lot of different viewpoints and a lot of different ways we've entered entertainment. So Deja, for example, the director of education and outreach, Deja started off as a music journalist, an entertainment journalist, and she pivoted out of she started off like writing for like Saint Haran, Madame Noir, stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
And she pivoted into education. So,
oh, shout out to her. She just opened up a Montessori school. I have to say shout out to Deja for that. That's amazing.
Honey pot. I get giddy when I look at like everything everyone who has ever been a part of the IEMC is working on. And I'm just like, it makes sense. It all makes sense. Before mm-hmm. we were trying to figure out what we were doing, now we understand everyone in their role. And with Deja L. Jones, for those who are listening, Deja L. Jones transitioned from journalist to educator. And as Ramsey says, she's opening a Montessori school. So with Deja, she understands how it is to enter the journalism space. But so with that in mind, she understands what it means to be a freelancer as a mm-hmm. former freelancer. So when we're crafting our educational sessions for the summer coming up with the programming, she knows exactly how to make everything make sense together.
Yeah, I don't think a journalist, like even staff writers, I don't think we ever stop being freelancers. I think we all.
it's unfortunate because you see that there are a lot of layoffs. There's always
oh my
a lot
God, of layoffs. Always.
There are mass firings across platforms. I can't even like Huffington Post just did one. There's a bunch of
ESPN, platforms. Like every like industry within journalism is doing mass layoffs. It's nuts.
And the thing is, what is unfortunate is that we don't have the financial security that a lot of other industries have. So our goal at the IMC is to make sure that we are keeping abreast of what's happening with these layoffs. We're doing what we can to the people that have been laid off, whether it's giving them subscription to the opportunities newsletter, whether it's sending them educational videos on how to start freelancing, like where to start, what's a contract, how do you draft your rates and what you should be charging and how to pitch something to an editor. Mm-hmm. Those are also important. And I think that what you said is absolutely true. Like we never stop freelancing. Whether you have your own platform like you and I, mm-hmm. or you write for other people and contribute other places,
you're like constantly, you and I.
Yeah, like constantly dipping into other parts of media, or as media changes, like websites, and I hate to say it because that's my baby, but websites are becoming obsolete if you can't adjust. You mm-hmm. see a lot of people like Entertainment Weekly, they just got rid of their fully print department. So they're doing nothing but digital covers for now on for all of their magazines. So everything is going to be now shifting to video content. So people that were formerly trained in being a writer, they now have to learn how to become a content management specialist, like uploading and editing video and editing audio, right? Yeah. Understanding transitions. So we're constantly learning as our industry evolves. And I think that's a great thing. And it puts the IMC in a great place to always have somebody that we can be helping somewhere.
Yeah, all the bloggers from the blog era became journalists, then radio personalities, and now podcasters. And it's crazy. I have done all of it. But
me too.
But and congrats on the podcast, because Invert is also a podcast now.
Thank you. We're doing podcasts, but not how you do it on A Side B Side. You guys have it pop in and y'all have like consistent episodes. We do special series episodes. So the first series that we rolled out was albums of the year, and we broke it down by genre. The next pieces that we're going to start doing is we're going to start doing, and I guess I'll premiere here. So we're going to start doing like news recap. So instead of doing written out articles for everything, the stories that we miss, because there's a lot of stuff going on at a lot of times. And you see now people have like the Instagram headline. They'll have like a graphic with mm-hmm. the title of what the story is. So instead of doing that, we're just going to do the podcast version of that. So like these are the stories you missed for the week and have a rundown of everything.
Nice.
So that's easier for us because we want to be consistent, but we also, with so many other projects in the air, we want to make sure that we can commit to it fully before we start something.
I feel that. Before we get up out of here, Felot, where can we find all your social, which will also be in the description, so if you're driving, get to your location before you try to start clicking this. But where can we find you, Felot?
You can find me across Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. My goddaughter still wants me to open a TikTok account, but I refuse. I'm holding on for dear life at Felicidam, FLISADAM, and the letter P as in pointer. And if you're interested in any other platforms that I've mentioned, like the IMC, all of those inside of my social media handles will be tagged as well. So if you find me, you'll find everything else we discussed.
Indeed. All those links are in the description. Shout out to us. We out here working.
Thank you. I want to thank you for inviting me back on. I know like we talk about other stuff outside of this, but your support means a lot to me. And
likewise.
I mean, listen, I love everything you're doing at What's the Move. I mean, listen, I've contributed. So, like, you know that I value what the site is doing. And I really do appreciate the passion that you show for independent musicians. Not a lot of people put a lot of care into how they cover people. And I think that it is honorable to put it mildly.
Thank you. That means a lot. I'll never hear it from the artist, but I heard it from you.
Never. We'll never hear it from the artist. But at least we see each other.
Yeah. Oh, also go to pointerpublishing.com. That's the URL, right?
Yes.
Okay. For your new book. And thank you guys for listening. As always, we appreciate it. Rate, subscribe, review, tell a friend to do the same. And follow us on our social media.
Yep.
I'll talk to y'all later.